Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Hey, Christina. Christina, can you hear me? Christina?
I can hear you, Alicia.
Oh, good. I just want to make sure that people can unmute themselves because it shows that you, when you log on, that you can't unmute yourself. So I just wanted to check. Eric, are you able to unmute yourself?
The answer is yes, despite the world's desires that I not unmute myself.
Hi, Trita. Can you hear me?
Hi, Director Ta. Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you.
Can we come to order?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Do we have a quorum?
Yes, it looks like we do.
Okay. Okay. Let's bring this meeting to order. Can we have a roll call?
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Zara?
Yes.
Director Brandman?
Aye. Here.
Director Sheldon? Director Sheldon? Director Yeo?
Here.
Director Ta?
Here.
Director Rowe?
Here.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau? Director Sarmiento?
Here.
Director Sheldon? You have a quorum of your committee.
Here.
I think Director Sheldon just said, yeah, here. Okay, do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay. Any visitor participation?
I don't see any hands raised at the moment.
Okay. Do we have a motion on the consent calendar?
Roger, you'll move it.
Second by Brayman.
Okay, roll call, Director Green?
Yes.
Director Zara?
Yes.
Director Brandman?
Aye.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Aye.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Okay, moving on to state ledge update.
I'm hearing from our consultants that they are unclear if they're unmuted. So Christina, could you make sure that Paul Gonzalez, Jason Gonzalez, and Jason Eichard can unmute themselves?
Sure.
Thanks.
I think I can unmute myself at this point.
There you go.
Oh,
and this is Jason Gonzalez. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
And Paul Gonzalez, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yep.
Fantastic.
I know that was more than likely intentional because it's one of the only ways to shut me up is to mute me. But good morning, Madam Chair. This is Jason Gonzalez, and I'll try to give a brief update on kind of where things stand with the legislature, given they have returned from the quasi-return from the post-COVID-19 truncated session. And this week's been challenged like most local agencies and areas throughout the state with protests. And the National Guard is actually in the Capitol hallways this week. So it's been unprecedented times on both the COVID front as well as some of the protests. But that said, the Capitol, all the staff is telecommuting. In the event a member wants to have or feels they have to have a staff member, the member can designate one staff member to come to the Capitol on specific days. But the staff is all working by phone and telecommuting. All the members have pared down their bill packages considerably. I think the most telling example is yesterday, the Assembly Appropriations Committee went in at 3 p.m. They had 188 bills total on the suspense calendar. Typically, and particularly in the second year of a legislative session, we would see 3 to 5 times that number of bills. So they have pared down those bills considerably, and they held about 50 of the 188 bills. So the Assembly looks like it's going to have 135 to 140 bills going to the Assembly floor, which is the House of Origin. You know, none of those bills have made it to the Senate yet, and vice versa. The Senate bills have, by and large, haven't made it over to the Assembly. So of those bills, one bill of interest, Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia's AB 3256, the Economic Recovery, Wildfire, Safe Drinking Water, and Drought Preparation, the bond bill, it's now a $4 billion bond, and that did move out of appropriation. So it just shows that the Assembly, at least, is still considering trying to move forward potentially with the bond. In addition, yesterday, the Senate Pro Tem and the Assembly Speaker announced the Democratic leadership had reached a budget agreement. So we will see a budget drafted and adopted before the June 15th constitutional deadline. I'd call it the paycheck deadline, because if they don't adopt it by June 15th, they forfeit their paychecks under the Constitution. That said, both houses, by and large, have proposed a budget that staves off most of the cuts the governor proposed in the May revise. And they are proposing to hold off and see what type of federal relief, if any, they receive from Washington, and depending on what the hero package or whatever that relief looks like, we will more than likely see what is now being called an August revise. So with the tax returns being due July 15th, it's, you know, they won't have their numbers until August as far as personal income tax receipts. So most are seeing the real budget work to be done in August. And lastly, the Assembly and Senate, since they've been back and we're on this truncated schedule, they're operating on different calendars, which is very different. For example, the Senate has floor session June 22nd through 26th, and then they go on recess July 2nd through July 13th. Not to be outdone, the Assembly has floor session June 15th through 19th, and they go on recess June 19th through July 13th. So the Assembly is going on recess considerably earlier than the Senate is. So I guess the upshot of that is they're both coming back on July 13th, and they will have until August 31st to close out the ordinary session, the second year of the two-year session. And we expect, you know, again, particularly the budget to be front and center during the latter part of session, particularly the month of August. So with that, that's the lay of the land. It's unprecedented. A lot of testimony being done via telephone, and by and large, the public is not allowed in the Capitol, including the staff. So it's a different time and one for the record books, that's for sure. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do I have any hands? I can't see anything.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Okay.
What are the likelihoods, what's the likelihood of this new HEROES Act getting through in any form or shape?
I'm sorry, the question broke up. Was that regarding the CARES Act?
The new, is it called the HEROES Act? What's the likelihood of passing the Senate, or a form of it passing the Senate? And what's the... I believe it includes some funding for cities and municipalities and localities, right?
Yes, and I would yield to our friends in Washington. They probably have a better finger on the pulse. But what I will say is, you know, a number of local governments, you're absolutely right. They're particularly those that didn't meet the 500,000 population threshold as part of the CARES funding. They are definitely hoping for some relief at the local level, and the state is obviously relying on a considerable amount of relief in order to balance the $54 billion budget deficit. So I'm hearing that there is a chance for a HEROES package, and I'm hearing it has received some momentum. McConnell recently said it will be the last bailout package, but I know there's also presumptive liability for businesses and the like that is being leveraged as part of that relief. And again, I would yield to those, my colleagues in Washington, that may have a better read of the prospects.
Okay. And the last thing on that is that if there's anything in for water agencies in there, but again, we can look into it with the, when the federal update is.
Director Rowe.
Thank you.
Yes, I was reading in the newspaper earlier this week about a bill that's been proposed. I think it's 298 or 398, where they plan on getting $275 per employee for companies that have more than 500 employees in order to generate about $3 or $4 billion. I was just wondering, does that really have any headway? What's your opinion on that? Is maybe something that we want to say, what are you doing?
My sense is, at this time, it's just something that's out there, and there's been a number of competing proposals for potential taxes or fees, as they want to call them. My sense is, depending on a lot of it, the linchpin in this discussion is how much relief, if any, the state receives from Washington. If they don't receive much COVID relief through the HEROES Act or any other form of relief, then I would say, yes, the Assembly and Senate Democrats are looking for any and all revenue possibilities because they definitely opposed and put up a lot of resistance to some of the cuts, all of the cuts that the governor proposed in the May revise, most notably about $15 billion to schools. So if we don't, the short answer is if we don't get federal relief, it will be where can we raise revenue in order to stave off some cuts to schools and social services. So it becomes a very difficult situation.
I could see a mileage tax being looked at a little more closely. That's an easy hit possibly.
Okay. Jason, what do you think the chances of the bond bill getting out?
The Senate and Assembly will have to come together on something particularly, and with the governor, obviously. And at this time, the Assembly seems much more ambitious than the Senate on bonds and other issues. And not to throw in another issue, but they're having a joint hearing in Revenue and Taxation Committees today on the split role initiative. And depending on how it factors in to the political calculations, because there's a lot of interest groups on particularly the Democratic side, labor, and most notably in schools, I'm looking at the split role initiative. So it's all part of their calculation of how much bandwidth there politically there may be for bonds and fees. But given what happened this last election, with the school bond failing, I think it definitely sent a sense of caution throughout the Capitol, and I don't think that's left. So,
okay.
I call it a jump ball. Go ahead.
And Director Green, just to add to Jason, a bond would have to be agreed upon and passed with a 2/3 vote by June 25th to find its way onto the ballot.
Oh.
And so we're looking at a 3-week time frame for that at this point, which is a pretty narrow window. You never want to say something's impossible, but the longer it takes for them to have some sort of agreement with the governor and other parties, the more challenging that's going to get.
Okay. And then on AB 2560, what is that going to go to the Senate, do you think?
Yeah. So this is Jason again, or Jason Eichert. I have to always clarify that. So... that's a great segue. So we can give a quick report on that. So the short answer is...
Okay, you can wait. You can wait. I'm sorry. We can wait.
Oh, sorry.
Let me make sure there's not... I don't see any other...
Kathy, this is Dennis. I have a question.
Okay.
For Jason Gonzalez. So I understand there's a bill to consolidate West and Central Basin that Speaker Rendon has introduced. I don't know if you guys... touched upon this. I joined the call a couple minutes late. Do you foresee that making it through the process? That's a pretty pretty hostile bill.
Dennis, it's definitely a drastic measure that, for those that aren't aware, it's SB 625 by Senator Bradford, and it seeks to dissolve, in essence, for an 18-month period, the Central Basin Water District's Board of Directors and move their employees and responsibilities over to the Water Replenishment District. That bill has moved out of the Policy Committee, the Assembly Local Government Committee. It moved out of Appropriations yesterday. It's been unanimous to date. The Speaker, while he's not the author, he's actively involved in the legislation. I think it will clearly pass the Assembly, but in the Senate, there could be some hurdles on that legislation, particularly some of the senators that represent that region have indicated some concerns about the draconian aspects of the measure. Does it go too far? Yes, it will likely move out of the Assembly, but the real work and struggles will be in the Senate amongst the Democrats and that represent that area.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Jason Eicher, do you want to take over now? Sorry. I don't see any other raised hands, correct? All right. Jason?
No need to apologize, and I'm sorry for jumping the gun there a minute ago, Director.
That was great.
So we're really happy to say that actually AB 2560 of the 140 bills or so that that my colleague just referred to is one of the ones that will be moving forward, and in fact moved out of Assembly Appropriations. And so when we were last speaking, we were kind of getting ready for the bill to be heard in both the Assembly Environmental Safety Committee and in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. And in an effort to make sure the bill was in the best shape possible, we were actively working with your staff to get the language in good shape. So as a quick reminder, you know, what is in the bill today is a requirement that when the Water Board is going to set a new notification or response level, that they actually have some sort of public process in place, that they post on their website and provide notification to stakeholders like the district that they are working on it, that when one is available, they post a draft notification or response level, and just as importantly, or maybe more so, that they indicate what studies or information they're basing that level on. And lastly, that and note whether it's peer reviewed or not. So obviously the board is well aware that in previous instances, and in fact the most recent one, the board was relying on studies that were not peer reviewed. And so if AB 2560 continues, and it looks like it will, and it becomes law, they will have to not only note what studies they're using, but note whether it's peer reviewed or not for the public. And then lastly, they will have to schedule the new notification level or response level as an informational item for the board. So the board will not, it will have to hear, you know, from their staff that there's a new notification level and response level, and entities like Orange County Water District will have an opportunity to evaluate what the board is doing and provide feedback to the board at that informational hearing. So with the bill as it looks today, we have a new support that's come on board. So Clean Water Action, the Environmental Working Group, and the Natural Resources Defense Council are all supporting the bill. And the bill was placed on consent in the Assembly Environmental Safety Committee. So it passed unanimously, obviously, on consent, and was passed on consent in the Assembly Appropriations Committee, and is actually on today's calendar on the Assembly floor on consent. So all very good news. You know, we will obviously continue to work on the bill and stay very close, but you know, we're just happy to report that we've got a good author and good staff that we're working with, and have had a lot of success in moving this forward. And so we're happy to answer any questions about the bill.
Great. I don't see any hands.
I guess I would just like to thank all my friends over at NRC for jumping on the bill and being involved. It's great.
We'll make sure they hear that, Director.
Please do. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I'm not sure if this is the time, but when the presentation is finished, I would like to ask regarding any bill that might help utilities, that the state has put out laws that utility companies cannot turn off utilities for tenants during the COVID. So if there are any bills out there to offset that, and if the water district would have a share of that.
Okay. I'll take a crack first. So this is Jason Eichert again. Obviously, the state's budget is in a bit of a tight situation, but you are correct. I mean, you know, local utilities have been asked to do the right, to help their ratepayers who can't afford to pay bills at this moment. The associations you're a member of, in particular the Municipal Utilities Association, have sent letters to the governor kind of indicating that this is an issue out there that may, you know, need some addressing in the future. There are no bills pending right now. And I think, you know, with the pandemic crisis kind of moving into an ongoing budget crisis. There hasn't been a ton of focus on these issues yet, but obviously we will continue to look for opportunities. I mean, we know that this is an important issue for the district, and we will keep you posted if we think there is any opportunity to work on that going forward.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, President Sarmiento.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Jason, on our bill on the 625, have we reached out to the author, Assemblymember Quirk, just to see if they need any additional information from us, anything we can help with, or just simply a thank you as this thing moves along? I think, you know, the closer we stay in contact with him, the better. The flip side of that is sometimes, you know, when things are going well, you don't want to muck things up and talk too much. So, but just if you can kind of monitor his staff and see if they need any additional information from us. You know, I'm not sure how our delegation is doing down here with support, if everybody's signed on so far, if everybody's aware, but to the extent we get everybody advised, at least in our district area.
Thank you, Director Sarmiento. But both of your firms have an excellent relationship with Dr. Quirk and his staff that we're working with. We stay in very close contact with them, and we definitely express our appreciation frequently for all of the good work that they've put in. And I think at some point down the line, you know, once the bill, you know, hopefully, I mean, at the way things are looking now, it looks like it's got a smooth path to passage, but, you know, once it gets to that point, I certainly think that a thank you or a note of appreciation would be in order to Dr. Quirk, formally from some of you. But yeah, we continue to stay in very close contact with them.
Great, thanks for that, Jason.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it had a smooth path until Jason just said that.
That's right.
You know, that's exactly what I thought when he said it.
You know, it was okay. Funny. Yesterday at the meeting, when we were talking about everything that's going on with the pandemic and then some of these, you know, demonstrations, I said, you know, I don't know what else could go wrong. And then we had an earthquake. So,
God.
Okay, I don't see any more hands. So, thank you very much. Are we ready?
Madam Chair, I have my hand up.
Oh, I don't see it. I got it. All right.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Just to follow up on President Sarmiento's comment, I think it would be appropriate to touch base with some of the other co-authors that are on the bill, and not just Assemblymember Quirk's office, but maybe some of the other co-authors. I think Assemblyman Daly is on that bill. And to check in with them and there again, I think express our thanks for them co-authoring the bill. That was it.
Good idea. Okay, anybody else? Okay, shall we move on to federal?
Okay, can you hear me,
yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Good. Yeah. All right. Well, the COVID-19 pandemic seems to be abating somewhat, though whether there's a second wave or how quickly a vaccine or effective therapies are developed remain unknown, and that uncertainty will impact how both Congress and the federal government operate for the foreseeable future. The House of Representatives has adopted a proxy voting rule that allows for one member on the floor of the House to vote on behalf of 10 other members absent from the floor. The change is temporary and will be reviewed later in the year. The rules change also allows for virtual committee hearings and markups. With that in place, the House will conduct virtual activity through and schedule votes the week ending with the 4th of July. Eric and Lori and Rich can discuss specific legislation in a minute, but in general, this change should allow for appropriations bills to be marked up in the House before the August recess. And speaking of August, the Democratic Convention has been moved from the third week of July to the third week of August, when Congress was already slated to be on its annual summer recess. That will allow for most of July to be devoted to virtual congressional activity, with more votes scheduled in the House for the last week, perhaps the last 2 weeks of July. Meanwhile, we're taking advantage of the this opportunity to hold virtual meetings ourselves. Earlier this week, we met virtually with the Corps of Engineers headquarters staff to discuss the Prado Basin feasibility study. Mike was called away at the last minute, but Greg Woodside gave the update on where we are in terms of finalizing the feasibility study with the Chief of Engineers report. If the Chief's report is not signed until November of this year, that may make it difficult to get into the WERDA 2020 legislation, but Lori can speak to the specific timetable of that in a minute. Corps staff said it would take about a month for Washington to process the Chief's report after it is received, though they will try to expedite that if there's a possibility of including it in WERDA this year. Let me add that a WERDA authorization is required only for the ecosystem restoration portion of the study. The authorization for the Corps to increase incidental water storage at Prado Dam to elevation 505 year-round already exists from earlier WERDA acts. That can be implemented by an MOU between OCWD and the Corps with regard to the Prado Operations Manual. We've also been working with members of our congressional delegation to schedule virtual meetings in lieu of the canceled Washington trip of late March. I was in touch with Congressman Ruta's staff just 2 hours ago about our request to meet virtually with him. His scheduler said he would have some proposed dates and times tomorrow for OCWD to meet virtually to discuss PFAS, both OCWD's ongoing efforts and the congressman's interest in congressional legislation. Over the coming weeks, we anticipate that OCWD will have additional meetings with members of the delegation to discuss PFAS and other issues, including the North Basin's EPA designation on the national priorities list. So I'll stop there and let the others pick it up with some details of upcoming legislation.
Okay, Eric, are you next?
I am, thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, good morning, everybody. I'm going to touch on some infrastructure updates and I'll leave WERDA alone. I think that's what Lori, as Jim said, is going to talk about. So what we're looking at right now is the leadership in the House, headed up obviously by Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Steny Hoyer from Maryland, are assembling an infrastructure package for unveiling sometime in the coming weeks. It will align itself with the Speaker's framework that was released in January. For our purposes, the framework included approximately $35 billion for water infrastructure. However, the leadership is asking members for information and recommendations on how to expand the water sector needs. And to that point, we've been working with the delegation staff, specifically Mr. Ruta, who sits on the key Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, which supports the SRF program, talking to him, his staff, about the value of making certain there's enough funding in any infrastructure bill that would support innovation in the water technology sector to allow water agencies to reduce their capital costs and operation and maintenance costs. And we are optimistic that at some point provisions will be included in the leadership's package to that end. Call it smart water technology for lack of another label. We also have been in contact with the Bureau of Reclamation, and sort of on a 30,000 foot level, the Bureau of Reclamation indicates that they are expecting the Office of Management and Budget to approve the pending project identification for funding under the WIND program, water recycling and desal and water storage in general that would benefit California writ large. in the coming weeks. The hope is that they would include this list of eligible projects going to the Congress in order to be incorporated into the fiscal year 2021 budget action for the Energy and Water Development Appropriations Bill that would then clear the way for actual dollars to be obligated to projects. And on the appropriations process as it relates to infrastructure, we expect the House of Representatives to move forward on the 21 budget numbers late June, moving into July, so that they get to the House floor sometime before the August recess. And at the same time, the Senate is moving forward to move their appropriations bills. And the final analysis, given the fact that there is a budget agreement overall in place, we expect that there will not be a shutdown such as we've experienced in the past years, but rather either passage of key spending bills by October 1 or a general continuing resolution that would probably extend into March timeframe in light of the upcoming presidential elections in November. So I will stop there. Happy to answer any questions. I did not talk about COVID-19. I think we talked about that. Everybody has a sense of where that's going. So I'll stop there, Chair.
Maybe you're the only one. I don't see any raised hands, so shall we move on to Rich?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right, great. So just to kind of pick up on the approach angle, it's expected on, as was asked before, the HEROES Act, which passed the House the end of last month, that the Senate will take that bill up in the guise of COVID-5, probably end of June, early July. The Senate this month is really going to focus on judicial nominations, the National Defense Authorization Act for 2 weeks, the end of the month, and right before that, permanent designation of the Land and Water Conservation Fund to provide permanent funding for that bill. So there's not a lot of space in there to give floor consideration to the HEROES Act in this month. It's possible it comes in somewhere in between, but more likely probably in July. And to call what the Senate does the HEROES Act is probably not going to be accurate. The HEROES Act itself was a $3 trillion kitchen sink bill, providing funding for everything except infrastructure in terms of COVID relief. The Senate is going to have a much skinnier bill that will probably be in the $1 trillion to $1.2 trillion range, so a third the size of the House bill. And it will much more focus on regulatory relief, including liability protection, against employee lawsuits for folks coming back to work, as well as product liability protection for the companies who extended themselves and used their manufacturing capability to produce PPE as well as hand sanitizers, things like that, during the pandemic. There will be $500 billion or so, most likely in funding to state and local governments, not only for COVID response activities, but also for revenue loss. There's a bipartisan coalition in the Senate working on that. So that will extend the CARES Act provisions that provided funding, but only allowed that funding to be used for COVID response activities. So this will be much more broad. Obviously, that will help the state of California and the big hole they have in the budget. And obviously, many other states are in that situation. In addition, it will lower the threshold from $500,000 to $50,000 for local governments who receive direct funding through the federal appropriation. So many smaller cities will be, and counties will be getting direct funding as opposed to the CARES Act where you had to have a 500,000 population to get direct funding. But this will not be sort of a stimulus bill. This is still kind of going to be in the COVID relief space. Obviously, as referenced, the House is working on its infrastructure bill. We're not expecting
the transportation authorization bill that is part of that, or the climate provisions in that to become law this year. Because mainly the House has no way to fund a new five-year transportation bill right now. It is, there's a good chance that they will bring that transportation bill to the House floor in July and have a vote on it without a funding mechanism. That seems to be where Democratic leadership is going. But until we get a funding agreement, which will not happen before the November elections, it's unlikely that those provisions, including transportation and the climate provisions, everything else, will become law. So we're likely to have a one-year extension of the transportation bill by September 30th when it expires. That's in contrast, as was stated before, to the Water Resources Development Act, which we do expect to become law this year, either before or right after the elections, assuming we have a lame duck session. Finally, on the appropriations front, the Senate has all of its markups scheduled for appropriations starting next week and working through early July. The House is going to be marking up its bills in early July as well, and plans on bringing those bills to the floor starting the week of July 20th. So the process is kind of moving forward on appropriations. Obviously, as in past years, we will not see any of those bills or many of those bills cross the threshold to be signed by the president before we leave for the elections on October 5th. So we'll likely have a continuing resolution that takes us through December, as was referenced, and that will give staff the time in September, October, and November to reconcile differences between the House and Senate passed bills, and come to final fruition. We're not expecting a huge problem in getting the appropriations process done, in that this is the second year of a two-year budget agreement. So we know how much money we're going to spend. We have that top line number and we'll go from there. So left out in all this is any kind of stimulus plan. We're in kind of wait and see mode on that. McConnell was very careful in his statements to make clear this would be the last relief bill. But the outlook from the Congressional Budget Office, as well as various other financial institutions, has been that the economy is in for a rough ride through, quote unquote, the winter. And at some point here along the way, that may well mean that we're looking at a stimulus bill that would include broad infrastructure funding and all those sorts of things. It's not looking like we're going to have time to do it before the election, but that may set up for early 2021 action. I think that's probably it. The only thing I'll just mention for reference, because I know how important PFAS is to the district right now, we are expecting more debate about the hazardous substance listing of PFAS in the National Defense Authorization Bill, which will come to the House floor later this month. We do have a chance, assuming the Water Resources Development Act passes, we do have a chance of seeing the drinking water provision become law this calendar year. As you recall, it fell out of the process at the very end last year, but we could see that pass as part of the Water Resources Development Act this year, or even possibly NDAA. So let me stop there and open up to specific questions for all of us.
Hey, I don't see any raised hands. Is there anybody who had a question that doesn't have their hand raised? Okay, don't think so. All right, can we move on to public affairs?
Good morning, Director Green and members of the committee. Could you hear me okay, Director Green?
Yes, I can.
Great. I would just like to briefly highlight some of the outreach that's contained in the report. We are continuing to try to get more of a virtual speakers bureau. So we have done outreach to more than 50 local community groups throughout OCWD service area. We are certainly making sure to hit groups that are representative of each division of each of our 10 directors. So we have had a few virtual speaking engagements in April and May. We have more slated for June. Some of the upcoming ones in June include two that are in Director Sarmiento's service area, one that Director Zara will be doing along with Meg McWade from Fullerton. And we are definitely working on others as well. So as we hear back from respective organizations in each of your service areas, we will make certain to reach out to each of you regarding the invitation and work with you on a presentation. If there are any organizations that you would like us to reach out to directly on your behalf, kindly email me and we'd be happy to do so. In terms of other virtual opportunities that we are working on, we have scheduled 6 virtual tours in the months of June, July, and August. We do them twice a month. We do a morning and an evening. This Friday will be at 10 a.m. will be our first tour. The format is we will have staff on Zoom who will give a welcome, and then we'll play the tour that is moderated by Mike Marcus, and then follow it up with closing remarks and then a live Q&A. So we have about 100 people that are scheduled to attend this Friday's virtual public tour of the GWRS. So we're definitely looking forward to that. For webinars, we have been moving forward with hosting water webinars once a month. Last month, May 28th, we held our first webinar, and it was regarding tap versus bottled water. It was very well received. We had more than 120 participants. We definitely had even participants from India and Australia that were on the line. And we are recording all of our webinars and all of our tours, so they are posted on our website after, and we are promoting them via email and in our newsletter, waterline, social media, so every way that we can, and also the partners that are in that. So I wanted to let you know about those virtual outreach opportunities that are going on. Also wanted to give a brief update on the SAPA grant that OCWD received, the $100,000 that goes towards watershed education for disadvantaged communities. I've been working with Greg Woodside's staff on this, and we have submitted a quarterly report, so we are doing activities on it. We've started up an agreement with Inside the Outdoors. And right now we're taking the opportunity, the district have the commitment to fulfill all of our field trips by the end of the calendar year. Due to COVID-19, we are unable to do that. So staff has been having meetings and is reaching out to SAPA as well as Inside the Outdoors, who's a partner working on this grant with us, and trying to discuss, if the structure of the grant and the field trips could be modified, and that perhaps we could bring in virtual field trips instead of what was originally proposed due to COVID-19 and the likelihood that most students, the school year will look different, and it's highly unlikely that they will go out on field trips. So staff is engaging and trying to, again, work with SAPA and come up with alternative ways to execute the grant and still get the funding for that. So we'll keep you apprised of that. And finally, just wanted to touch on our events for the remainder of 2020. They have been canceled. We did have the Groundwater Adventure Tour scheduled in October, and we did cancel that. But as I mentioned in the beginning, we will continue strong virtual outreach through our tours and webinar program. In the coming months, we will meet with the summit chairs to discuss the water summit for next year, which we don't think will be impacted. We do have it scheduled, and we have a contract in place for June 4th, 2021. And finally, wanted to just update you about the Children's Water Education Festival. We do have some upcoming meetings scheduled to discuss the 2021 festival, which would take place in March or April of next year. Given that our Disney staff are still furloughed, our partners that we work with, and given the new landscape of schools and the virtual virtual and kind of social distancing that will be implemented in the classrooms. We're not quite sure what the festival will look like in 2021. So we are exploring, in addition to the traditional format, we are exploring other options to host a festival in 2021, should it arise that we're unable to do an in-person live event. And that concludes my brief update. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them at this time.
Yes, Director Rowe has a question.
Yes, very good summary, Gina. Thank you so much. Talking about the festival is no more. It's called the Summit. What is it called now?
Oh, you're right. Thank you for correcting me. It's called the Youth Environmental Summit. Thank you, Director Rowe.
Okay. And I thought I'd mention that I read DWR awarded on Tuesday our grant for the final expansion. It's what, about $3.6 million? Mike?
Correct.
And so I think that's worthy of doing some public outreach to say that we do have this grant, is in support of everybody in the watershed. You know, the good ideas that would share this good news. Thanks.
It would make for a nice press release.
Yes, thank you, Director Rowe and Mike. And we did reach out to Sandy Scott Roberts and are getting information and are in the process of drafting one. So we'll definitely get that out. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank Mike and Dennis and the staff who got that fund set up through this Prop 1, Round 1.
Thank you.
All right, Director Zara.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all our staff for working hard on all of this. But one quick thought is that as we consider more web-based programming or activities and so on, is that we also consider that we can keep this type of programming on a regular basis. I think there's benefit as we're all experiencing now Zoom and online, and I think there is benefit from actually using this technology to reach even more kids in schools that may not have the ability to go to the festival to have some sort of form of education. I know hands-on is always the best, but if we can find a way to incorporate web-based educational programming, that could go straight to the classroom and be a good supplement for the schools that don't have those resources, or the timing doesn't work out because of their school schedule. That was my 2 cents. But other than that, thank you very much for all the work.
Thank you, Director Zara. We'll definitely look into that, and great comment.
All right. Thank you, Gina. I don't see any more hands. Okay. Can we?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I have my hand raised.
All right. For some reason, yours doesn't show up until after I dismiss everything.
Oh, is that right? I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I just wanted to follow up on what Director Zara was saying. And with the virtual tour, staff is looking into redoing the virtual tour. You know, the version that we have out right now, we did very quickly. I mean, Adrian followed me around the plant, and I gave a typical, you know, probably more technical type version of a tour. What we thought we would do is try to shorten it. Right now it runs over 20 minutes, which is rather lengthy. And to try to shorten it and maybe, make it less technical so that we could use it to a wider audience. So that we could use it maybe with some of the elementary or middle school, and maybe even have several different versions with varying degrees of technological speak, or techno speak, if you will, regarding the tour. So those were kind of the same, some of the things we're talking about also internally, staff-wise. And as Gina said, we're looking at different ways in which to use technology to be able to put across our messaging better. I mean, we could have a virtual four-bay tour. We could have a virtual Prado tour. There's a lot of different things that we can do, post it to the website. You know, we are getting, I think, pretty good hits to the website. And I mean, that's what we want to do, educate. And we should be able to use this technology and develop different programs to help further that goal. So, thank you.
Okay.
Well, Mike, I'd like to say that sounds like a great idea. I was just thinking you could have like little sub-subjects with our specialists mm-hmm. that can provide a little more insight. You do give good tour, I must admit, but you sometimes don't know the details that some people may not know, may want to know.
Yeah. No, that's we have a lab tour and just go through the lab real quick, show the instruments, kind of explain what we're doing. You know, there's a tremendous amount that we can do, and we're starting to think about that more. And I think that's one thing as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. It's made us think a little bit more about using technology to reach out to people.
Mike does do good tour. Absolutely.
Thank okay. you very much.
I don't see any more hands. Anybody? Going, gone? Okay. Let's put everything on the consent calendar. Directors, do we have any announcements or reports? General manager?
Nothing to report, thank you.
Okay, we're adjourned. Good morning, everyone.